Episode 65. The best athlete to wear the number 65 is future Hall of Fame defenseman Erik Karlsson. And if you hold a variable rate mortgage like myself and you want to educate yourself and get a bit depressed at the same time, read about the Great Inflation, which started in 1965 and did not end until 1982. What's going to happen to inflation? Hopefully it's going to come down, but as history has taught us, you never know. Beyond MD, episode 65, here we go. Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining me on the Beyond MD podcast. Today we're going to be diving back into tax matters. I have Kim Moody, who is one of our country's very top tax experts on the show, and we will be discussing the AMT, the Alternative Minimum Tax. Okay, so what do you need to know about AMT, the Alternative Minimum Tax, before diving into this episode? I'm going to do my very best to describe it quickly here. So when we file taxes at the end of April every year, we pay tax, and that tax is calculated based on our taxable income, and it utilizes certain credits and deductions, and then we have a tax amount owing. Well, at the same time, there's another tax calculation happening, which is called the AMT, the Alternative Minimum Tax. It uses a different set of credits and deductions and generates a taxable income. And for 2023 and prior, the first $40,000 of taxable income would be exempt from AMT. Anything above that would be subject to a flat 15% AMT tax rate. And if your AMT calculation was higher than your regular tax calculation, well, then you would be owing AMT. Now, in 2024, the deductions and credits, they are all more punitive. Yes. But what's happened is that the exemption rate has risen from $40,000 to $173,000. But anything above $173,000 is subject to a higher flat AMT tax rate of 20.5%. And if, based on the new AMT calculation, you have tax owing that is in excess of your regular tax owing, well, then you owe AMT. I hope that makes some sense. So the table of contents for this episode will be as follows. In part one, Kim is going to give us a breakdown of AMT mechanics, a bit of AMT history, and I also pick Kim's brain on when tax changes happen in Canada. What is the process? What is happening behind the scenes? I really enjoyed his very candid take on all of this. Part two, we will be going over the nuts and bolts of AMT, the specific changes that are happening, directionally, where are things going, and by what magnitude are things changing? And then in part three, we are going to be going over some rough calculations on AMT owing in certain scenarios. So now a bit on my guest. Kim G.C. Moody is a chartered accountant, registered trust and estate practitioner, and a tax specialist from Calgary, Alberta, and he is the CEO and director of Canadian Tax Advisory with Moody's Private Client and Moody's Tax. His main area of expertise is tax and estate planning for private corporations, executives, professional athletes, and other high net worth individuals. Now, Kim is driven to innovate new and better ways to do things for his clients. He is obsessed with everything tax related, and this makes him a very highly sought out resource for both peers and clients. In March 2020, Kim published his first book, Making Life Less Taxing, which was an Amazon bestseller. Kim is very keen to share his vast knowledge, and he does this through podcasts, through writing, lecturing, teaching, and by being an active national leader in the tax profession. Kim is a loyal, transparent, and honest intellectual rebel. He is passionate to lead, teach, and never settle. And for him, speaking up and speaking the truth aid in his contributions to the tax landscape. A fun fact on Kim, he fulfilled a long-time goal of getting into law school in 2016, but he loves tax so much that law school will have to wait until his next life. So guys, with that, here's my interview with Kim Moody. All right, Kim, welcome to Beyond MD. I'm really excited to have this chance to talk to you today. Thank you for making time with us, because I've been following you for a few years now on LinkedIn. I've enjoyed your content. I'm learning a lot, and I see you as one of our tax experts in Canada. So I'm going to be picking your brain on AMT. But before we get into that, maybe you can just take a little bit of time to tell us about who you are, what your main expertise is, and where your interests lie.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your podcast, and sorry about following me on LinkedIn. I'm sure it's been a few eye rolls once in a while, since I tend to be rather opinionated, but I like to hopefully consider that my or think that my opinions are backed up. But in any event, that aside, so I'm 5'2" on a good day. I'm an accountant by background. I've been practicing in the tax field for about 30 years now, actually. When I first started practicing, I thought I would just become a tax specialist. And I quickly realized that I had no idea what I was doing. And so like many new entrepreneurs and new specialists, I had to really surround myself with good people and mentors. And so I did that and ultimately grew through a variety of journeys, Moody's Tax, which was started in 2007. And it's a law firm and an accounting firm. And we do a lot of work on cross border. And for me personally, I've led pretty much every single tax organization in Canada, like Canadian Tax Foundation, Society of Trust Estate Practitioners, the Joint Committee of the Canadian Bar Association, and CPA Canada. And so I just have a real passion for tax. And so that's me on the career side. And on the personal side, I've got four kids and a lovely wife.
Wow, great.
Four boys that are, am I allowed to call them shitheads?
Yeah, sure.
Love them to death, but of course the boys mature slower.
Oh, do
that's
they
the
ever?
Stereotype.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I know how it goes. Yeah.
So that's me in a nutshell. So
awesome. I know you're a Flames fan. I'm a big hockey fan too. You may not know this, but I've been a lifelong Penguins fan. So I grew up early childhood in Newfoundland, started watching Mario Lemieux. Jágr entered the league, and it's been a great run for me as a fan. I also lived in Calgary for a year before I relocated to Toronto. So yeah, some common interests there. So Kim, let's talk about alternative minimum tax and the AMT. And embarrassingly, I didn't even know about this until 2023 because it started to get more attention because there were proposed changes coming. But maybe you can give us a quick synopsis of AMT. What is it? What is the history behind it? And then we can get into some of the changes that are coming.
Sure. So AMT is well known in the tax profession. Most tax professionals, I would submit to you, I think it's a really silly tax, and they just basically grin and bear it and have for years. It was first proposed in the 1985 federal budget. I don't even know if you were born then yet, but 1985.
Yeah.
I was a high school student, almost graduating high school, and I remember when they proposed this because I was starting to get an interest in tax, and it got a fair amount of press. And it was basically introduced as a proposal to copycat what was going on in the United States. The United States had introduced an alternative minimum tax, and basically it was a rebuttal to the perception that, the so-called rich are not paying their tax because they're taking advantage of a bunch of deductions and credits that are all legal, but they're taking advantage of them too much. Overly simplified, that's what the alternative minimum tax was in the United States. And in a nutshell, Canada basically copied that rhetoric and ultimately, consulted with the public and not much consultation like there usually is not with tax, but legitimate consultation, at least anyhow. Once they have an idea, they tend to ram it down your throat. And that's been going on for decades and decades, no matter who the government in power is. And sure enough, January 1, 1986, it was introduced as a new proposal. And overly simplified, I mean, that's the history. And basically, it's an alternative way of calculating tax. And I can quickly describe the mechanics if you want. But
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it.
Okay. So the mechanics go something like this. You calculate your regular taxable income using all legitimate tax credits and deductions that you're eligible for. And then you have your tax payable. So that's method one. And then you're required to do method two. Now, most Canadians have no idea that you're required to do method two because the software just automatically does it. Because most Canadians do their tax returns on software, and the software is smart enough to automatically calculate the alternative minimum tax way. Mm-hmm. And the alternative minimum tax way is to take your regular taxable income. So start with, what you had in the first column, and then add back certain deductions and preference items, and then certain tax credits, and then subtract a basic exemption. And for years, the basic exemption has been $40,000. And then multiply it by 15%, which has been the AMT tax rate ever since it came in. And if it turns out that once you do all that stuff and the federal tax payable is higher under the AMT way than the regular way, then that delta, that difference between AMT and the regular way is called alternative minimum tax, and you have to pay the difference, but really you're paying the total, right? You're paying the regular tax plus the AMT to get you to that higher amount. And so that's the basic architecture, and that delta of AMT, you can recover that over the next 7 years to the extent that, you know, year one after the AMT exposure year, if you're not subject to AMT, then you can apply that delta to the next year. And if it turns out you can't use it all because the mechanics of how you apply it are a little bit convoluted, you've got a 7-year carry forward. If it turns out you haven't used the AMT after 7 years, it becomes a permanent tax. That architecture has been around since 1986, and there's been very, very little changes since that time.
Okay.
Little tweaks here and there, but nothing much.
That's great. That's really helpful. So maybe we can just address that carryover right off the bat. So you said that if somebody has AMT owing, they are allowed to carry that over to future years to offset any taxes as long as there's not additional AMT owing in future years.
Correct.
Am I understanding that? Okay.
That is correct. Now think about that for a second. Yeah. Am I allowed to swear on your
Absolutely. Podcast? Absolutely. Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
I won't use the offensive ones, but you know, I can say the average tax practitioner, there are certainly some that disagree with me, look at this AMT as total bullshit, right? Because if you're able to recover it over the next 7 years, which most people do, frankly, then really what is that AMT? Well, it's a prepayment of tax. Mm-hmm. All for what? Smoke and mirrors. So that the government can take the position the rich paid their fair share this year, but in reality they're gonna get it back over the next, you know, seven years. So it's a prepayment of tax that is convoluted and complete BS in my view.
Okay. Well, maybe some positive to what we're gonna discuss today. It sounds like you can get at least some of it back. Now, just on a side note, when the governing bodies make these decisions, like I would hope that certain people who are experts in this area are consulted. I don't know what their process is, but is there a process? Like are people like you and others around the country consulted on, hey, is this a good idea? I'm just curious, my own curiosity.
Yeah, no, that's a great question that, you know, not a lot of people know. Not a lot of people ask, so kudos to you for asking it. But I can tell you in the tax profession, this has been, you know, a bane of my existence forever. I mean, it's one thing to be a mechanical tax preparer. You know, it's another to be a tax specialist who really wants to dig in and understand tax policy. You know, why did they introduce this provision, for example? What's the mischief? Because generally there's a mischief. And then, hey, what was the process, which is really to your question, what is the process of them introducing this? Did they consult? In Canada, what happens is all tax policy is under the purview of the Department of Finance. And it's right on their website. You know, that's what they say, is that that's their responsibility. Now, I can tell you, it's a very closed shop. You know, the Department of Finance, you know, the gurus, the bureaucrats that are there, and I know a lot of them, they're really, really solid people. Unfortunately, there's a fair amount of turnover, but they come up with, you know, the thoughts by gathering information and intel from, you know, the Canada Revenue Agency, who says, hey, you need to look at this. There's some abuse here, blah, blah, blah. And just the overall landscape and, you know, the OECD, what's happening in the international. And then they come up with plans. And then, of course, there's their political masters as well that say, hey, you need to come up with, for example, you know, maybe a topic for another day, the ridiculous flipping tax for residential real estate, which are,
I know you've talked about, you know, that. Yeah.
It's just crazy stuff. Like, so they, unfortunately, they're beholden to their political masters. So once they come up with whatever the idea is, then they develop the idea. And if they need to, you know, and I'll put this in air quotes, consult with the public, then they'll release in many cases a consultation paper. And usually it's under, they'll release it to the public, including, you know, people like me in the tax profession. And they'll say, hey, give us your comments. You've got this much time. I can tell you that the criticism is, one, it's closed shop. They develop it on their own. Two, the consultation papers that they release are usually just, they're not going to deviate much from that. They've developed the idea to the point where they'll take some things that they forgot about, but that's about it, you know. And okay. So it, in my view, and I could go on and on and on about this, I'll just end it right now by saying that I've been a real strong advocate of opening up that tax policy arm so as to have more consultation, legitimate ideas, more ideas than are just submitted by themselves.
Good for you. I hope that happens someday.
It probably won't in my lifetime.
Okay. So you talked about some of the mechanics of AMT that we know today. You talked about, in 2023, at least the exemption of $40,000 and then the base rate of 15% tax. So how have those parameters changed 2024 going forwards?
Well, there's a number of proposals that do you want the history on these amendments and what happened? Because I can give it to you real quick.
So, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Sure. So, you know, when you're in tax and especially tax policy, unfortunately, you have to dive into politics because a lot of this is politics. And I get criticized for being outwardly, you know, critical in many cases on my LinkedIn account. But tax and politics are inextricably linked. And so just put that aside and accept it as a fact for people that don't like that because it's true. Mm-hmm. So what happened in the 2021 federal election campaign is the Liberal Party, just like all the parties, released a policy platform. And in that policy platform, there is two sentences about a promise to introduce a so-called 15% minimum tax to ensure the rich are paying their fair share, something like that. There was literally two sentences, but it was a 15% minimum tax. And so when I read that, I just literally rolled my eyes. I was in a hotel room in Vancouver and I read it and I literally rolled my eyes saying, you know, whoever wrote this, which, you know, I've gotten to know that many authors of these policy platforms, especially tax, have no clue what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. They're usually youngsters who have no experience in tax. And so I don't have proof on it. But it was pretty obvious that whoever wrote those two sentences had no clue what they're talking about. Of course, the Liberals got elected, and now they have to follow through on their election platform. So in the 2022 budget, federal budget that came out, they basically said there is some short throwaway comment. I can't exactly remember what it said, but they're going to study this, which basically meant that somebody woke up yeah, this is going to take, I don't think we can do this because obviously the finance bureaucrats probably poked them, prodded them and said, yeah, you realize what you promised here? Because we already have an alternative minimum tax. Fast forward to 2023 federal budget. And sure enough, they said, yeah, we're going to make our commitment. We're going to fulfill this promise by amending the existing alternative minimum tax. So in other words, they scrapped this so-called 15% minimum tax in favor of just amending the alternative minimum tax to ensure that the rich pay their fair share. So that's the short history, ridiculous history, like usual. and so what are they doing with it? Well, you know, of course, in the typical governments, this government at least anyhow, and they're, you know, they love to attack the so-called wealthy and rich. So what they're doing is those preference items that I mentioned in the architecture, they're really tweaking those a ton. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of deductions that used to be fully deductible for AMT. Mm-hmm. Now, for the most part, those specific ones are only 50% deductible for AMT.
Okay.
For personal tax credits, used to be 100% creditable. Now, a lot of them are just a flat 50%.
Interesting.
So those are two of the three. The third and fourth thing they did is they increased the $40,000 exemption to the bottom of the fourth tax bracket, which is roughly $173,000 for 2024.
Yeah.
And then the last thing they did, which that, by the way, is an attempt to try to get, you know, because these additions on deductions and credits could really sideswipe the average Canadian, they needed to increase the exemption to exempt them. But of course, they colored it as being, you know, it's only going to be targeted to a small group of people, which in the whole scheme of things is probably true. And then the last thing they did is they changed the rate from 15% for AMT to 20.5%. So they didn't even stick with 15. They went to 20.5.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
So those are the broad-based changes.
Okay. So it sounds like with these changes, it's going to impact higher earning Canadians to a greater extent, but maybe they can get it back in future years. But Kim, another big picture question before we move on to the nitty gritty. I started listening to your podcast, by the way, In the Mood with Kim Moody. I've enjoyed the first few episodes. Yeah, no, it's good. You had, I think, one recent episode.
Not as
episode.
Slick as yours yet, but it's but I'm getting into it.
No, but you know what? So far, you're a solo show, right? You come with the knowledge, and I'm more a curious mind wanting to learn from people like yourself.
Love your show.
No, thank you. Thank you. But you had an episode, I think, about, you know, Canadians maybe considering leaving Canada. And this is more a big picture question. With the tax changes that have been happening now with AMT and over the last 5 years or so with corporations, like, what are you seeing in your practice day to day in terms of people expressing a desire to leave Canada? I imagine it's not always tax-based. There can be many other reasons. But what are you seeing in your practice?
Yeah, this is a Financial Post piece on this, Yatman, because I'm a weekly tax columnist for the Financial Post. And I think it was at the beginning of January I wrote a piece on this. And it stuff like this just kind of is a pile-on. Like amendments to the AMT are a pile-on to a tax on the wealthy and a tax on so-called high-income earners. And in my piece, I went back to, you know, when the Liberal government, federal government first got elected. And the very first thing they did is they announced an increase in personal tax rates to the so-called wealthy by 4%. And they, by creating a new bracket for any income earned over $200,000 is now 4% higher. And a lot of the provinces followed suit by hip-hopping on that. So what that did is it, number one, it spooked a lot of so-called high-income earners. But I can tell you $200,000 of income compared to the United States, I mean, $200,000 is nothing compared to hitting the highest tax bracket in the United States at roughly $500,000. So that spooked a lot of people. And then fast forward to 2017, and they went after private corporations and their shareholders, and there's a big national kerfuffle. And of course, I was involved in that. And that spooked a lot of people. And then during COVID, you know, with huge spending and threats of even further income tax rates and an introduction of a wealth tax and, you know, a guaranteed universal basic income, you know, all those things have spooked the average Canadian. So what I've said, I've lectured on this a lot. And what I said is in my practice, which I started about 30 years ago, up to about 2016, I had maybe a dozen files that I worked on where people were leaving Canada. And we call that, you know, departure tax, because when you leave Canada, you're deemed to have disposed of all your assets at fair market value. So you have to pay your tax. You got to work through it. A dozen files in about 24 years, roughly. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All of those were lifestyle cases, virtually. None of them were about tax. Fast forward to starting in 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 20, you know, up to today, our office has probably worked on about 600 files.
Wow.
Of Canadians leaving Canada. Now, having said that, of those 600, that includes people that are just exploring. They finally had enough. They want to know what it takes. Mm-hmm. All those 600 haven't left. But I can tell you, there's a significant portion of that 600 that have. And of those people that have, we're talking billions of dollars of wealth that have left through our office yet. You think about other practitioners across Canada. It's huge. So anyhow, that's a long-winded explanation to say that, you know, things like AMT and, you know, amendments and screw arounds with personal tax rates and threats of, you know, no economic foresight by our government is really spooking a lot of high net worth Canadians.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. Such a dramatic change in the last 5 to 7 years. Two quick questions before we move on to the nitty gritty. We've been talking about AMT as a federal tax, but is there a provincial equivalent as well?
There is.
There is.
Now every province is different. Off the top of my head, and I don't memorize this off the top of my head, but for example, in Alberta, my home province, I believe off the top of my head, it's a 35% of the federal AMT, but every province is different. And so the short answer is yes.
Yeah. It's always complicated with tax, right?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Are corporations going to be impacted? My understanding is no.
No.
Okay. Okay.
No. That's good. AMT is an individual tax. So.
Okay.
Which leads to some planning, by the way, with the use of corps, but anyhow.
Okay, let's get into what is being impacted the most. And we can talk about changes that are happening both from a directional perspective and maybe percentage magnitude. So let's say you have an individual who has significant capital gains that they are realizing in 2024. We don't need to do calculations right now. We can save that just towards the end. But what's happening with respect to the percentage of inclusion of those capital gains for taxable income, et cetera, with AMT?
Sure.
What do we need to know here? Yeah.
Well, that's pretty short, but pretty impactful. Under the existing, or prior to the amendments, the capital gains inclusion rate was 50%. Mm-hmm. But for AMT purposes, you would include 80%. Mm-hmm. So there's a 30% upwards adjustment on capital gains. Now, the upwards adjustment is not 80%. It's 100% for AMT purposes. So they've taken an extra 20%. So the highest federal rate, so that's the first impact. But the big impact is this. The highest federal rate for personal income tax is 33%. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you take half of that, doing math in my head, is 16.5%. Well, under the old rules, that 15% AMT rate, that meant that the capital gains rate was higher, right? So generally no impact, not a lot of impact there. You could still have some impact, but 16.5 versus 15, no impact. Now, same 16.5, but your AMT rate is 20.5, right? Because of that adjustment. So do you see the issue there?
Yeah. There's a delta now, right?
Capital gains are bad. Yeah. Capital gains are bad. So that's the big impact on capital gains.
So now what if somebody had capital losses in years prior and they want to carry those forward in an attempt to offset some tax? How has AMT impacted that process?
Well, if you have capital losses, the adjustments, now you can still apply your capital losses if they're incurred in the current year. But capital loss carry forwards, the old rule was that you could deduct 80% of them. But now the new proposed rule is only 50%. So they're really going to hammer you, which makes no sense in the whole scheme of things. But in any event, they're going to hammer you on capital loss carryforwards.
Okay.
In other words, if you've had capital losses prior years and you apply them against your current gains, they're going to hammer you on that.
Okay. Now, a lot of Canadians like to invest in dividend-paying stocks, and a lot of those dividends are eligible dividends. Has there been any impact to
generally
tax
no
from AMT? No.
No, generally no. And the reason why it goes same kind of logic with respect to capital gains, the highest tax rate, actually I've got that right here somewhere. But the short story is that the federal eligible dividend rate at the high end is higher than 20.5. Mm-hmm. And so, which is the AMT rate. And so from that perspective, eligible dividends are so-called good income.
So I know I asked you about this briefly before anyways, but if we had somebody, a professional who had a sellable business, let's maybe just think about a dentist who's trying to sell a clinic and they're going to sell, and their corporation is purified, as we like to say, and they want to sell that and basically be allowed to claim the lifetime capital gains exemption. I want everybody to understand, does AMT have an impact on this process? If you're trying to sell a business in 2024 and beyond, what do we need to know?
Yeah, the short story is yes. Now, to get into the nitty-gritty of how the amendments impact the capital gains deduction is probably beyond, it'd be like you describing surgery to me. but the short story is you have to consider capital gains deduction pre-amendments, and you're certainly going to have to consider them post-amendments because it will have an impact. But I won't get into the nitty-gritty because it is fairly...
It's complicated.
Yeah.
I guess one thing I want to know is, with the new AMT amendments, are they more punitive now in 2024 than 2023 when it comes to like selling a business? Is it worse now?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And the short story is because of capital gains. Forget about the exemption. You know, that's always been there and it'll still be there. But because you have to add back 100% of capital gains, that can really, really hurt.
Okay. So the next one I want to dive into is donations. Because I think, and this one may be a bit more interesting because I think there is going to potentially be an impact to charities. But if somebody, let's say, wants to make a significant donation, maybe they are donating appreciated shares of stock to a charity of their choice.
Yeah.
What is happening there? Because my understanding is that the capital gain before, if you were donating appreciated shares, that capital gain would have been tax-free, but now it's changed. My understanding is that potentially 30% is going to be included, but then I've also been hearing that this may not hold. They may make amendments to this. So what's happening with donations as we know today?
Yeah, well, there's a lot in your preamble there. So let me back the train up a little bit just to give you some context. So there's two things going on here with respect to capital gains. One is just a regular capital gain. Instead of being 80% inclusion, now it's 100%. If you donate appreciated stock directly to charity, you're right. It used to be a 0% inclusion rate, and you didn't add back anything for AMT purposes. And now the amendment is, you're going to add back 30%. And so when you think about that, under your regular taxable income, well, you've got no capital gain, but for AMT, you do, if you donate to charity. So that's a real problem right there. What's the problem with charitable donations? Well, in the situation where you have capital gains or a direct donation of stock to charity, well, go back to what I said earlier in some of these amendments, you know, where you've got deductions that are now only 50% deductible and personal credits that are only 50% includable or creditable. Well, one of the biggest personal tax credits there are charitable tax credits. And it used to be that you could, for AMT purposes, add back 100% of that credit. But now they've reduced that to 50, just blanket 50. Mm-hmm. So that because of that impact, so you got capital gains either in both scenarios, either direct donation to charity or just you have capital gains and you're going to make a donation and combine that with the 50%, you know, credit on charitable donations. Hopefully your listeners and yourself can see that, holy smokes, without even going through the calculations, which are horrifically complicated, by the way, you can see that this is a train wreck, right?
Yeah. So, I can see the multiple layers of impact. Yeah, absolutely.
And so the last point I'll make is just to comment on, will there be some amendments? Well, we don't know. There was a bill released before, you know, Parliament recessed at Christmas 2023. We thought that bill might contain the AMT amendments, but surprisingly, it did not. And so there was a lot of scuttlebutt in our profession, the tax profession, that maybe they are listening. Maybe they're concerned because geeks like me, and there's a whole bunch of people that were writing the Department of Finance and raising the alarm bells. I wrote a Financial Post piece on it that got tons of pickup that, you know, this is nuts. And think about this for 2 seconds. And I know I tend to be long-winded here, Yen, but when they decided decades ago that they're going to use the tax system to help charities, you know, function, that was a deliberate public policy choice, right? Because the other way they could have done it, you know, is they could have said, okay, we'll keep the tax system out of it. We'll allow charities, but we're going to fund charities directly from government grants, for example. We'll still raise the money from taxpayer revenues, but we will direct money as we see fit. That could have been, you know, a crazy way because, you know, government picking winners and losers, in my view, is never a good choice. Instead, they decided to go through the tax system and allow taxpayers to fund them, you know, and there's going to be charity winners and losers based upon taxpayer choice, but there'll be subsidies provided by tax credits or in the old days, tax deductions. When you now introduce a proposal that circumvents that public policy decision of decades ago, tell me that makes sense. It doesn't.
No, I hear you. It makes no sense. Yeah.
And so I think what's happened, I think, and I hope, I don't know for sure, is that saner heads are looking at this and saying, yeah, we got to amend this. So fingers crossed that we'll see some amendments as it relates to charities. I do not think that we're going to see amendments on AMT.
Really?
All, other than the impact it has to charities.
Okay. A couple points I want to just expand on with respect to charities. So let's say if somebody wanted to use the strategy of donating appreciated shares from their corporation, is that process still relatively intact?
Yep. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. What is your take on now donor advised funds? Are they becoming more popular to kind of navigate through this potential issue? We've talked about this on the show before on an episode, but I'm just curious if this might be a viable strategy now.
Yeah, donor advised funds have always been kind of an interesting idea for sure. Mm-hmm. They can be expensive depending on who has the donor advised fund and what the fees are. But so you got to look at that. But they've always been pretty flexible and pretty popular. And I do think that they will be certainly a method to avoid AMT. Have they all of a sudden spiked in popularity? Not that I've seen, because this is brand new stuff yet. But do I think it has the potential? For sure.
I know most of my listeners probably don't have stock options. Like, do you think this is worth discussing as impacted by AMT? Why don't we just talk about it so people have a comprehensive understanding then?
Sure. And just to make sure I've got this right, because I can never remember this on the top. Oh, yeah, here it is. It's in the old rules, so when you have a stock option, assuming you qualify, which most option agreements do, you're only going to include 50% of the benefit in your income net. Mm-hmm. You include 100% and then you take a 50% deduction. They've screwed around with those rules for large companies, but I'm going to ignore that for a second. Very large companies. So for the AMT way, you generally wouldn't be subject to AMT because there is no credit add back, or sorry, deduction add back. Now, the proposal is to add back 30%. And so if you're an employee that has stock option benefits, you've got to run the math and see if you're going to be hit.
So we know that the AMT affects individuals, not corporations. But what about the impact on trusts? What do we need to know there, big picture?
Yeah, big picture is that trusts are deemed to be individuals for Canadian tax purposes. Mm-hmm. So they are subject to the AMT. There's no specific carve out. But the killer is that they don't get the exemption of 173.
Oh, I did not know
and
that.
So, okay. And so if you have trust income and it's got, it's subject to these rules. Like, for example, let's say trust owns a rental property and it's got a loss. Well, under the new rules, you can only deduct 50% of that loss. Mm-hmm. Well, automatically you're going to have AMT, right? Because you have no exemption amount. It's really silly stuff.
So no exemption amount whatsoever for trusts? None? Okay.
No, none.
Now, just go back to the rental property for a second. I know you said that in general, there is basically a 50% kind of reduction in the amount of deductions that could be claimed for AMT. So if somebody owns rental property and, they have mortgage interest, utilities, property taxes, you name it, and they're trying to use that to offset taxes in future years, is that also subject to, like, you can't carry all that forward now? It's only 50%? Is that true under AMT?
I should probably, before I answer your question, which I don't totally understand your question yet, let me clarify, because I just looked at my notes here. I was actually wrong on just the flat out rental loss being, it's the components of the rental loss that you have to look at. And so you have rental income and then many have interest charges. Mm-hmm. And it's the interest charges, interest and carrying charges that are only 50% deductible now. So that's an important clarity. So sorry for misleading on the first case, but that interest charge is only 50% deductible now. So let's say you have a trust that has $10,000 of rental income on a property and it's got a mortgage. So it's got rent or interest expense. Let's say the interest expense pick a number. Let's say it's $12,000. You have a $2,000 economic loss. Well, now you have to add back $6,000 of that mortgage interest.
Okay.
And then apply the 20.5% rate and it gets no exemption. Okay. So now you got tax.
No.
You have tax on an economic loss. Makes no sense.
I think you answered my question there nicely too. So, Kim, I know we don't want to get lost in calculations, but I'm wondering if we can just share some really rough numbers, like really rounded numbers. Like let's say you had somebody who had capital gains and was also trying to carry forward some capital losses. Like what kind of additional tax, like what kind of AMT could somebody be expecting in these situations? Because I know what's going to happen to some of my listeners this year. So just would love that. Yeah.
So I'm going to give full credit here to my buddy, Jay Goodis of Tax Templates, Inc. Hopefully I can give that plug.
Yeah.
His company, you know, produces by far and away the best tax templates that exist in Canada, and they're kind of the standard. So him and I started this, we did a joint venture on a thing called Canadian Tax Matters. So we do a lot of education and webinars. Yep. So you can go take your listeners and you can go take a look at Canadian Tax Matters online. But we did a webinar through Canadian Tax Matters, and Jay cranked out a lot of calculations. And so I'm going to look at those calculations. So here's a simple example that we talked about. Let's say you have an investor, you know, one of your listeners that has $500,000 of capital gains. Let's say that's the only income they have, is $500,000. Mm-hmm. Forget about any other income. Mm-hmm. So obviously oversimplified. So in the old rules, 2023, no AMT. Any guesses, Yatin, in terms of what the AMT exposure is? Zero or something higher than zero?
Oh,
and if so, then what is it?
Okay, so now it's going to be 100% capital gains inclusion, right? So you take that $500,000, all included for your taxable income, you're going to be subtracting that exemption amount of like $173,000. So I guess you'll be left with $300,000 and change. And then I'm thinking, wouldn't that be just multiplied by 0.205? Is that it?
Yeah, you're close, but then you have to compare it to the regular way. And so, and, you know, these mechanics get really convoluted. So without getting into that, here's the bottom line. And this is, I believe, Ontario. $10,200 of AMT compared to zero, you know, for previous law, previous rules. So that's a very straightforward. Let's take another example.
Yeah.
We have an investor that has a capital gain of 500, but as we've already talked about, there's capital loss carryforwards that that this investor has. So they want, he wants to apply $100,000 of capital loss carryforwards. You know, so only pay tax on 400 of gross capital gains. Well, now in the old days, zero AMT. Today, 19,000, 18,906 to be exact.
Okay. So we've got basically, sure. But with that example, we've got a double whammy effect, right? Because you've got a greater capital gains inclusion rate and then your carry forward of capital losses is less tax efficient under the new AMT regime. So you've got
completely, but think about it from an economic perspective here, right? Like these are not just paper numbers. If you have a capital loss carry forward, that means that you've lost money.
Yeah.
And so
that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
So what they're doing is they're punishing economic loss applications. So it's a timing problem. It makes zero sense.
Okay.
And so here's another, or you want me to keep going? Or no?
Keep going. It's going to get more depressing, I think, each step of the way.
Let's give you a donation one, just to, because I could go on and on. So let's give you a donation one. I'm just going to flip through the pages here real quick, and then I'm going to give you a highlight one here. I'm going to test you.
Okay. you know, by the way, I heard that you do test everyone on podcasts. You know, our mutual friend Mayhol told me that he's like, you know what, you should interview Kim, but this is probably going to happen. I was like, okay.
Well, you know, I want to make sure you're paying attention.
So. Yeah.
So here's an example. This is pretty straightforward. So you got an investor with $500,000 of capital gains. Mm-hmm. Let's mix in good income, eligible dividends of $250,000. Mm-hmm. And we're going to donate $300,000 of that to charity. So in the old days, no AMT. What's your guess on AMT for this year? So just a reminder, $500,000 in capital gains, $300,000, $250,000 of eligible dividends. Is that what he said? Jeez, I better double check.
Yeah.
Here. Yep. And then $300,000 donation. Any guesses? So, we used to have zero AMT.
Yeah.
What is it now?
Okay. So the eligible dividends, that part I'm putting aside. So you're donating $300,000. So, and then you have, I guess, the $200,000 left over. So you've got 200, maybe.
Yeah. Don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that this process would should help you then just straight out capital gains, right? Or maybe I've misunderstood, but there's going to be AMT owing now for sure.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it would be tax strategic to do
I'll
this.
I'll short shrift it. It's 50 grand. The exact 50? Number is 48,000. Yeah.
50 grand?
48,995.
Really? Okay.
Like those, now you're starting to get to shocker material. So let me give you, here's, so in this example that I just gave to you, and this is something that Jay played around with, Jay Goodis, my buddy at Canadian Tax Matters. You know, he said, hey, Kim, you know that example I just did? You know, what would it take to reduce AMT to zero by reducing the donation? Like, how much of a reduction in the donation of 300,000 to start with would we need in order to avoid AMT? Any guesses?
Oh,
and I threw him a few guesses, and I think my guesses were...
Kim, I guess where I'm confused is I thought that the 300,000 donation... Maybe I misunderstood it. I thought that was going to help the situation, but it didn't.
No.
So you've got 500 capital gains, and on top of that, you've got a 300,000 donation, yeah?
Let's go back to the basic principles.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the basic principles. The donation helps you on regular taxable income, but for AMT, you're only able to claim half of the credit now, whereas you used to claim all the credit in the computation of AMT, but now you only can claim half. So you've got the capital gains that are bad income to begin with, and now you have bad charitable donations. It's a double whammy, right?
Okay. So, okay. It's making more sense
now. But you combine it with good income of eligible dividends so that it waters down the impact of some of this, right? So what if we reduce that donation so that we could take the water down effect of eligible donations? What against those capital gains? What is the amount of the $300,000 donation that you'd have to reduce it to in order to avoid AMT? Any guesses?
Oh, boy. I mean, I would think you'd need to go at least down to the exemption amount, but I'm not sure.
Here's you know, this shocked me when Jay told me. And again, I'm pretty good with calcs. This one shocked me, though. You'd have to make a donation of only $3,060. In other words, any donation above $3,060, you're going to have AMT. Now, think about that for a second. That's a 99% reduction in the amount of the donation. Does that make sense?
That makes no sense, yeah.
So there's some calcs for you.
Okay. You know, I thought I was beginning to understand tax a bit better, but it looks like I have some work to do.
Why do you think I get paid the big bucks?
Yeah, that's right. Kim, last two questions. What percentage of taxpayers, like let's say what percentage of high income professionals, obviously it's a case by case basis, but my understanding going to a few talks in the fall was that not many people were going to be impacted. But when I look at high income Canadians, I think the percentage is probably going to be higher. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. And we talked about that in the Canadian Tax Matters webinar that we did back in the fall. The parliamentary budget officer did some calculations. Now, on this. And I think the Parliamentary Budget Office, the PBO, actually in general does a pretty good job. In this case, I think they took a short shrift. I think they could have done a better job. Now, having said that, could I have done a better job in making those estimates of how many Canadians would be impacted by this? Maybe not, because I'm certainly no statistician. But all they did was they said, okay, here's how many it could apply to, but you know, because of some planning and what have you, you know, we're going to just roughly estimate some number. And it was short shrift. The short answer here to your question, non-scientific and non-statistician, is that these rules will not impact a lot of people to begin with, but it won't impact even fewer. In other words, if the government of Canada thinks it's going to impact, say, 1% of Canadians, or let's say 10% of high income earners, which I'm just throwing numbers off the top of my head here. I think that number will be a lot lower. And why? Because stuff like this impacts behavior change. And that's what the PBO is trying to do when they did their calculations, is to try to rough justice calculate what the behavior change will do to these estimates. But I can tell you in my client base, there will be virtually nobody in my high net worth, which that's all I act for is pretty much high net worth people, but most people will not put up with AMT exposure. So if the government thinks this is a way to collect money from high net worth people, good luck, because nobody will pay it. They'll plan around it. The only way they'll pay it is if there's somehow if they don't plan ahead and they walk into it by making a big donation without coming to professionals like me to calculate what their exposure is. So that's a long-winded way of saying, I think their estimates are way off.
Interesting. So that might be a good time for just closing remarks. I always give people a chance to just share anything as we wrap up the episode. I've really enjoyed talking to you, Kim. I've learned a lot.
And likewise. Sometimes I enjoy the sound of my own voice too much, but the part that I wrote a book 4 years ago. It's called Making Your Life Less Taxing. And the purpose of that book was just to make a breezy, light read on tax. Because, you know, I commend people like you for taking an interest in tax, because there's not a lot of people that do.
No,
most people just roll their eyes, right? And they say, oh my God, I got it. It's accountant time again. And so my intention of writing that book was to say, listen, tax is bloody important. It's the most expensive, call it investment, which I don't think it's much of an investment, that you'll make in your entire financial career. So you should manage that so-called investment. And are there certain things you can do to reduce the cost of that investment? For sure. I hate using the word investment in tax because it's not really an investment, but hopefully listeners get the point. So here's a closing example I'll give to you that was in my book. Yeah. You a Seinfeld fan?
I have my collection of favorite episodes, yes.
Okay. And I'm guessing a lot of your listeners are Seinfeld fans as well, except for the really young ones. So there's a classic episode with Kramer and Jerry. And Jerry's complaining about his stereo that's busted. And so Kramer bounces in and basically says, well, hey, I'll get your money back. And so he cooks up this plan, if you recall, that he's going to mail it. Fast forward to another day, and it turns out that the stereo, you know, Kramer busted it and sent it into the post office to claim the insurance on the mail, right?
Yeah.
And Jerry says, what? You did that? And he goes, yeah. He goes, well, you can't do that. He goes, why not? You know, it's a write-off for these guys. And so the whole comment of write-off goes back and forth.
Yeah.
Right? And then finally Jerry says, you don't even know what a write-off is. and it turns out Kramer has no clue what a write-off is. And I use that example. It was first paragraphs of my book. And I use that all the time as an example that a lot of people think they know tax. 99% of people don't, including accountants, because it is so bloody complicated, but it is so bloody important. There's a reason why Albert Einstein said that there's nothing more complex than the income tax. And you can debate the context he said it in, but I think he's right. Doesn't mean it's more important than medicine, for example, or physics. But do I think tax is more complicated than your profession? Yeah, I do, with respect. Do I think your profession is more important? Yes, I do. So in any event, there you go.
Kim, that is a really interesting insight. And thank you for that. So make your life less taxing. I will read it. I will read it.
If it takes you more than 2 hours, you're thinking too hard.
Okay. Awesome. It might make for some good bedtime reading, I imagine. But I'm just kidding. But I will give it a read. Kim, thanks for taking the time again, okay? It's been a pleasure to connect with you and learn from you. And I look forward to following you on LinkedIn. I know you're passionate about not just tax, but leadership and entrepreneurship. So, you know, keep it up and we'll chat soon.
That sounds good. Thanks a lot, Yatin.
Yeah. Take care. Take care again. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So as you guys can tell, I need to learn a bit more about tax. And one thing I've learned is tax is really, really complicated. And I do think that we need to learn about tax from the right people. So guys, I want to say one thing. I've noticed recently people are leaving more ratings and reviews. So thank you for that, because one, it gives me feedback about what's working for you guys. And two, it helps to spread word about the podcast. So I'm so grateful for that. And as it pertains to this episode, please give us feedback, ratings, reviews. Let us know what you think. Do you want to hear more episodes episodes like this. So guys, I hope to see you in a few weeks. I hope you'll join me again. Until next time, stay well, stay savvy.